Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, everyone out there who watched the 1968 movie 2001: A Space Odyssey mainly remembers the fight for his life that the human astronaut had to engage in with the onboard computer called HAL. And that was like, I don't know, 57 years ago or something, and it already reflected a fear among many people about how powerful computers could eventually become. And so for several years now, there's been a lot of heated debate about artificial intelligence, or AI, and the potential dangers it presents as it rapidly gains capabilities. Even Elon Musk and Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, people you'd think would be all for new technology, have expressed serious misgivings about the possibilities. ChatGPT, the first easy-to-use AI software application, almost immediately became one of the more popular, actually most popular apps in existence at the time. But Sam Altman, the CEO of ChatGPT's maker, a company called OpenAI, said that AI could either be unbelievably good or make it, quote, lights out for all of us. Not a happy prospect. And this is the guy who makes and sells it. AI is obviously a tool with potentially huge downside, but it's not obvious to anyone how to control it, or even if it can be controlled. My guest to talk with us about all this is Dr. Gillian Hadfield, a professor of computer science at Johns Hopkins University, who focuses on whether AI can be made to conform to our human systems of cooperation and our shared ideas of what's acceptable and unacceptable behavior, something that summed up in the word normativity. Welcome, Dr. Hadfield.
Hi, just great to be here.
Thanks for being on. Good to have you. Can we call you Gillian?
Yes, you absolutely can.
Good. So I've given a general introduction to what you do, but can you explain it in a little more detail, normativity is and so on?
Sure. So normativity is a $50 word, but it's a very simple idea that everybody knows well, I think, which is just the fact that among humans, we have a way of saying this behavior is okay, this behavior is not. And that ranges over everything that from what we call norms or culture, all the way up through to formal law and regulation. But it's just the simple idea that what humans as a group do is collectively reach a way of saying this is okay behavior, that is not okay behavior. And I use the language of normativity just to say, well, this is actually a very complex and interesting phenomenon that we really need to understand a lot better than we do in order to think about that control problem you mentioned that Sam Altman talks about.
So that whole concept sounds, sensible and good and desirable, but I have to say it also strikes me as possibly over-optimistic. I mean, we don't have to look far around the world today, or even here at home, to see examples of conflict where legal and ethical norms are suddenly and violently broken by people and even nations that really don't care about fairness and cooperation. They just care about power or money or both. And I think we are, after all, still primates, and it's impossible to eliminate the animal drive for dominance, no matter how much our better nature might want to. Do you agree with that? And if so, how do you factor that proclivity for bad behavior, for actually evil, into your work?
So I mentioned that one thing that I just really am attracted to in thinking about this idea of normativity is precisely the fact that it's a very complex process and that I think originates with humans. So you mentioned primates. I think that when we get human societies, one of the things that sets us apart is our capacity for, as a group, saying this is okay and this is not okay. Now, it's complex. It absolutely is not perfect. There's all kinds of drives, whether you think it's, we still have a dominance drive from our primate history, or just we have self-interest. I want to achieve my goals and I don't care about your goals. And the thing that's really quite amazing, I think it's important because we get so much bad news about how often, you're exactly right, how often what seems like would be the cooperative or the good thing to do fails. There's definitely evil people in the world who are doing bad things, some intentionally, and then there's just bad things that happen because we just get it all wrong. But I do always want to remind people to be kind of in awe of the fact that our human societies have managed to go from little bands of 15 to 20 people living in a camp to our complex, incredibly diverse, complicated, high technology worlds of today.
Sure.
And we only did that because we actually managed to get this to mostly work a lot of the time. But I totally agree with you. It doesn't work all the time. It's just that if we now look out to this new world that's coming up extremely fast upon us with artificial intelligence, that we need to be thinking about, okay, you know, they're kind of like new members of the group. They're arriving. How are we going to make sure that we're able to continue to do at least as well as we do now in terms of shaping behavior so we get the stuff we're looking for and avoid the stuff we're not looking for? How are we going to make that happen with artificial entities in our midst? And I totally agree with you. We don't want to be starry-eyed about human societies. There's lots of things we'd like to do differently, but we've come a very long way, and I'd like to make sure that artificial intelligence doesn't knock us off that path.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the core of what we're talking about here today. So, I mean, you mentioned the new world that's bearing down on us with AI. So let's talk more specifically about the direction that AI is heading in terms of capabilities. I mean, the next step, I think, is called artificial general intelligence, or AGI, a type of artificial intelligence that matches or exceeds human cognitive abilities. In other words, it's maybe smarter than we are. And beyond AGI, there's a point at which AI can train itself and doesn't need human programmers at all. And that's called the singularity. That's kind of like the next step beyond that. And then there's the prospect of having AI that's self-aware, that has an actual consciousness of itself. So how do your models factor into that prospect of basically machines that are smarter than we are and don't need us?
So let's unpack, first of all, that term, like artificial general intelligence. So okay. Humans have general intelligence. I mean, collectively, we can solve almost all problems, at least with, you know, our computational abilities and with what information is available to us. We're not just trained to do one thing. And historically, computers were trained to do one thing, right? To compute a list of numbers or to make a prediction about, you know, what's in this data, that kind of thing. So anybody who's interacted with a chatbot today and asked it a question, whether it's ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude, has had an experience of a form of general intelligence, right? It can answer lots and lots of different kinds of questions. Now, the idea of it becoming smarter than humans is then, well, if we're on a path where it can answer any type question and it has access to so much more information than any one individual, the models, the chatbots that we see today, for example, have basically read everything that's digitized on the internet, digitized books and so on. So that's kind of amazing. Or think about the science journals. You ask it a science question, like help me figure out how to diagnose this disease. And it can just boom, like in a very, very short period of time, go and read every scientific journal and try and help you find clues. So smarter than humans there means that massive capacity to review information. And I think that does generate for people thinking about, okay, so if it became smarter than us, what if it wasn't pursuing the goals that we want it to pursue? You know, we've got ideas about what's okay and what's not okay behavior. That's normativity. So how do we make sure that the model, which is smarter than us, is actually pursuing the goals that we want? And if it's smarter than us, maybe it gets smarter in the way that it can just lead us to think that it's doing what we want it to do, but it's not. And I don't mean to anthropomorphize it and sort of say, well, it's thinking through, ooh, how can I be devious? It's just like, if you give it a goal, it can find all kinds of ways of solving that goal that you never thought about. And therefore, you can't keep checking. Wait a second, is that exactly what I wanted it to do? The idea of the singularity, and people use that term in a lot of different ways, but I'll use the one that you described, that AI training itself. And we are seeing AI systems that are being used to do AI research, like, hey, AI, figure out what the next change in the computer science should be in order to get better at what you're supposed to be doing. And so the idea that people worry about and think about is, well, what if you kind of made that more autonomous and it starts building its own copies of itself? It starts building the next generation of itself in a way that's disconnected from human control. Mm-hmm. And then your last point about, oh, and what if it becomes self-aware, right? We start to get that image. You had that lovely opening with everybody hopefully has seen of a certain generation anyway, 2001 Space Odyssey. I have been surprised in classes when I teach at the university to say, well, of course, you all remember in 2001, and I can get some blank stares. But it's perfect because it has exactly that idea in it that the human astronaut says, open the pod bay door, Hal. And Hal responds, I'm sorry, I can't do that, Dave. And it's
don't want to do that, basically.
I refuse to do that, right? Yeah. Yeah. But if we go back to the movie, right, it's that the machine has said, well, no, the job I was given, you human are going to get in the way of me completing that job. So I'm just going to stop you taking those actions. And so that has this, all those pieces put together, right? Smarter than us, you know, able to build itself, and then, you know, self-aware in the sense of I have a goal and I'm going to take these steps to interfere with your capacity to interfere with me. And so that's kind of a vision that, well, we have to decide, is that really the path we're on? Is that, can that really happen? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes this language of smarter than us and self-aware can kind of get us a little confused into thinking like, oh, it's become like a human, right? Mm-hmm. Or even a better than a human. And we're going to lose out because it's going to be more powerful than us. And I think it's helpful to just remember we're building systems to solve goals. They're working on that. They could have solutions we never imagined. That's what can make it really valuable. Like it can solve math problems or medical research problems we can't solve. But the challenge is that we never know if the goal we gave it is really the one we wanted. And so that's the challenge. So it's really just goal-directed behavior on steroids or silicon, I guess. Right. And the challenge is that the goal may have diverted from what we really wanted. And this is the point in my research that I've been emphasizing for a long time, that actually, you know what? We never can say exactly what we want to happen, what exactly is good behavior. We can only kind of approximate it. And then we just have to keep filling it in and watching what's happened. And I think that's what a lot of the ways we interact and have conversations, is this really okay behavior or is this a violation of the law or not? We need institutions, we need conversation. And what you don't want is a machine that's cut off from humans who can see what's happening. We said, get us the coffee. This is a favorite example from Stuart Russell, who first focused the AI community on these concerns of control. You know, you can build a machine to get you coffee, but wait, I didn't mean kill everybody in the coffee shop to get it. And that's really, I think, the challenge that we face is how can we make sure that our systems are, just like you or I would say, wait a second, is this okay? Maybe I should talk to somebody. Maybe I should call a lawyer. Maybe I should take the case up the hierarchy and ask folks if this is acceptable.
Yeah, so what struck me repeatedly in your description and discussion just then is that you're a nice person, you're a highly educated person, you're a good person, and not stroking you here, but you know, just stating the obvious, but you kept saying it might do things that we didn't intend, it might diverge from our good intentions. What also strikes me is that there are plenty of people in this world, as we all know all the time now, who have no good intentions, who are not nice people, who have evil intentions. And so those people controlling the same tools can set AI in directions that you never would, in which they are intentionally set out on a bad path to do bad things. That's the scary part to me and a lot of other people. And isn't it to you? I mean, how do your models factor into that prospect of direction that's not just misdirection, but intentionally bad direction?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. These are concerns. And sometimes when we talk about we call them the frontier risks, meaning that I like the language of frontier because it captures the notion of we're out in new territory. We haven't been here before and we need to explore it and understand it, and it can be dangerous. But frontier risks, people will talk about misuse. Other humans could get this powerful technology and use it to do bad things. And yes, there's lots of people doing bad things in the world. Then there's the problem of the system. Like I say, we gave it a goal, but oops, we didn't say everything we really wanted it to do. So it may end up doing things that we don't want it to do that we can't really see. Sometimes that's called misalignment. It's not aligned with our goals. We thought it was, but it's not. And then there's the one I think a lot about is just, gosh, our societies are so complex, our markets, our social systems, our politics. And I think of that as kind of a delicate dance that keeps it all in check. And what if we just introduce something that's so powerful, changes so much of how we do everything that it kind of breaks our systems? So that's a systemic risk. But on the misuse one that you mentioned, which I do share, I think this is quite reasonable to be concerned about this. And the challenge there is, okay, so we try to keep the bad behavior in check. We know we don't eliminate it. We've got people doing terrible things. We have drug trafficking and child abuse and child trafficking and all kinds of violence around the globe, as well as here at home, of course. And we have reasonable success, but we don't have 100%. We still have more of that than we. So yes, I'm saying we, the collective good we, that we want. But we need to figure out, one, are there ways that we can reduce the likelihood that these powerful tools become available to those who are doing bad things? Just like we try to keep our big financial systems out of the hands of money launderers and drug traffickers and arms dealers by, you know, working hard to cut them off from access to our banking systems. You know, are there ways we can minimize that access? Are there ways we could detect when the bad uses are happening? And I think when you hear people talk about, and I'm one of them, AI is moving very fast and we are not ready. Our governments and our institutions are not ready. A critical thing is we haven't figured out yet how to get our control systems, even for the versions of things that aren't sci-fi, right? Even for the versions that are just ordinary bad people doing bad things with it, you know, we haven't built those institutions. So we have complex processes in place that if a bank is opening a bank account, they need to check the ID of who's opening the bank account. They need to run systems that try and identify what are money laundering transactions, and they're under legal obligation to do that. We actually have no regulation around access and use of our increasingly powerful systems. So as a minimum, we need to start at least creating an identification and registration system for that so that we know who we're, what we're interacting with and who's using it. And I think those are systems that we should be building quickly so that we can then start taking the next steps of how do we work hard and develop the systems that can keep powerful technologies out of dangerous hands.
Like, you know, I hate to keep being the devil's advocate. I'm not advocating, but, you know, it's the nice people who follow the rules, the nice people who would register for that system and so on. But anyway, so you're listening to American Variety Radio, and I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Jillian Hadfield, who's an expert on I guess you could say on the ways and means of controlling AI and its future developments. And we started off talking about a company that developed ChatGPT. OpenAI safety researchers, I've read, have recently been leaving the company. And they're concerned about a race toward AGI, this kind of thing we're talking about, that's taking shape between leading AI labs like theirs and also among the superpowers. So one of them said in an article I read, quote, an AGI race is a very risky gamble with huge downside, and no lab has a solution to AI alignment today. You mentioned that term alignment. And the faster we race, the less likely it will be that anyone finds one in time. He said he was personally pretty terrified, he said, about the pace of AI development. And then Google recently dropped its pledge not to use AI for weapons or surveillance. So, I mean, ethics in AI means you'll lose the race, I think. And so what about you as a woman with a family? Are you scared? I mean, I guess you've said you're concerned, but these are leading people who are really close to it. The developers of it seem to be losing sleep over it, you know?
Yes. And I actually spent 5 years working as an independent contractor with OpenAI from 2018 to 2023, working with their AI safety and policy research teams. 2018 was when they were still a small nonprofit, just doing research, but with a strong commitment to building AGI, which everybody thought was really never going to happen, but with a founding mission as a nonprofit to make sure that it was built in safe ways and with a lot of awareness for the risks. So I've been in those conversations with folks, and there's a lot of sincere concern about what's possible. Me personally, I worry most about the we're moving so fast and we haven't built the institutions and governance. Mm-hmm. And we haven't done the things we absolutely could do and do in fairly short order to basically take back the public control, the collective control over how our societies are developing. There are things we could be doing right now that I think we're not. So I worry about the speed, and therefore I worry about just breaking our systems. Like, what's the employment effect, and what's the impact on our systems of communication? What's the impact on our markets? A lot of what these companies are now talking about is building what they call agentic AI, which means I basically give an instruction to an AI system and it goes off on the internet and says, oh, please, you know, figure out how to run my business or find and engage in good transactions for me. Here's my bank account. And I worry about the systemic effect. I don't lose sleep. I do know many sincere people who are closer to it than me who do, but I don't lose sleep on AI is going to, you know, in some sense, wake up next month and decide it wants to take over the world. I do think there are significant risks from powerful systems that have goals that actually aren't the ones that we intended, because it's almost impossible. And you mentioned the race and the fact that a lot of companies have shifted. It is true that OpenAI went from a nonprofit to originally a capped profit, and I think it's looking to become a full for-profit company. And then, of course, our other developers are also for-profit companies. And my PhD is in economics. And I look at that and I say, well, yeah, it was kind of weird that these for-profit companies were doing the work of our governments, which is coming up with, okay, what are the policy constraints we should put in place? What are the rules we should put in place? What are the limits we should put in place? So I think it was like fantastic that they did. And there's still a reasonable amount of that going on within the companies. But it's true, it's not as much as it was in the past. And the pressure to race, because it's now become billions of dollars and a massive race to get the next version out. But just as we don't really leave it up to our other companies to completely self-police, right? We have governments, we have processes that say, no, that you can't do that. We are going to require that your car is able to do well on crash tests before you can put it on the market. And, you know, you can't dump those chemicals in the water and can't put that pollution in the air. That's the function of the group of us. And hopefully the we, right, the one that is oriented to the good the is good mostly we. That. That's right. Well, I like to think the collective is the good we.
Well, you're optimistic and I hope you're right. I mean, it seems to me there's like three main elements to it. I mean, technologists want to develop sexy new technologies. I've described them and I work with them myself all the time. And I'm a chemist and I work with engineers constantly. And, you know, scientists and technologists in general wear blinders. I think they're just focused on what they want to get to and they're competitive about it. Companies want to make money. And then third, legislators usually can't even understand these things in any detail, but mainly want to keep their constituents and political bosses happy. I mean, it's obvious they can't even agree to go out for a burger anymore, you know, complete dysfunction. So how can we convince technologists and companies and legislators to care about normativity and effective rulemaking for AI? I mean, you're talking about the need to develop a regulatory framework for it, which is obvious, but realistically, I mean, how can we do that realistically?
So I think the first step is to just recognize how critical. So we sometimes think of markets and regulation, like we could have markets without regulation, but we came in and imposed regulation on them. And a key thing is our markets don't exist without lots and lots of rules. Can't break your contract, can't steal somebody's intellectual property, can't hurt somebody with your product. There's lots of law there, which I also think of as regulation. And then we think about like registration, like I can find the business that sold me that product because they have to be registered with the state if I think they've caused me harm. We don't have any of that structure in place with AI. And the starting point, I think, to get over the hump of, oh my gosh, don't regulate this and kill off innovation. I agree. We do not want to kill off innovation. But the starting point is let's at least get the groundwork in. And that's what I think we could do immediately and recognize that we will need to build the appropriate systems for a very different world. I think we can get there. I'm optimistic. I'm confident. It's my area of research. I have lots of ideas if anybody wants to reach out about what I think we should do next.
Yes, I mean, you're a professor and you're not a senator or a CEO. And apart from speaking at conferences and publishing papers, what can you do other than being on radio shows like mine and doing this kind of media contacts? What realistically on a big scale, are there things you could do that you can envision doing anyway that you could help to slow down this race and build guardrails when companies and countries might not even care about them? And if not you, who could do it and how could they do it?
Yes. So I'm actually working with a number of nonprofit organizations that have now started to focus on these issues and are doing things like drafting legislation or drafting policy, looking to figure out how to get briefings into staffers in Congress and state legislatures. So that's the work that I do. Is I don't even really consider this my research work anymore because I did the research. And as I say, pretty clear what things we could and need to do. And so my own work is around advising, being available, assisting in saying, here's the policy we can put in place. Here's the legislation we could try. And of course, having conversations like this is part of that, because I think we need the public to recognize there are things we could be doing and there are paths forward for doing that. So I don't want my work to just be I'm writing in journals and having academic conversations and dinner party conversations. I do think it's very important for those of us working in this domain to be engaged. Yeah, so that's the ways in which I try to get us back onto the path I think we need to be on.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation, but we're going to have to pretty much leave it there, Jillian. So what are a couple of the best websites or podcasts or maybe best books that are many listeners could go to learn more about this topic and to keep up with the fast-breaking developments in AI.
Okay, so one of my favorite podcasts, I just think because they're a lot of fun and they're up to date, you know, you can sort of listen to it on a regular basis and find out what's the latest thing that's happening. And they're very thoughtful about both the opportunities and the risk is the Hard Fork podcast.
What's that again? Hard Fork?
Hard Fork. I find that one really fun and interesting.
Okay.
Ezra Klein has been doing a lot on AI over the last couple of years, and I find that extremely thoughtful. So those are two podcasts that I think are good to listen to.
We pretty much have to wrap it up there, I think, then. So maybe one book.
So I would say Stuart Russell's Human-Centered AI. And then, you know, if people are interested in normativity and where I think we are in the evolution of humans and how AI impacts that, I have a book from actually before I was getting deeply into AI called Rules for a Flat World, Why Humans Invented Law and How to Reinvent It for a Complex Global Economy. The paperback version of that has a prologue that talks about AI and where I think we are and how we need to think about it.
Sounds good. So thanks, Dr. Hadfield, so much for being on with us in American Variety.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a great conversation.
And thanks to all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place for more American Variety Radio.